coming up on this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
What hyperbaric therapy really does is just rev up the whole healing process to make it work better.
It increases blood flow, increases stem cell production, kills zombie cells. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark. I have a question for all you healthcare practitioners listening to this show. How much time do you spend ordering functional medicine lab tests? Well, lab work is a critical tool for functional medicine. It helps practitioners find the root cause of illness. But the process of ordering, managing, and tracking lab results can take hours of time away from actually caring for your patients. And that is why I want to talk to you about Rubah Health, the absolute best way to order testing from over 30 different lab companies like Genova, Dutch, DSL, and lots more. Rubah makes ordering labs ridiculously simple, which means not only are you able to spend less time on tedious processes, but it also allows you to provide a higher standard of care for your patients. If you're not already one of the tens of thousands of healthcare practitioners using Rubah Health, make sure to go sign up for a completely free account at rupahealth.com. That's rupahealth.com. If you've been following me for a while, you know that I often talk about how eating organ meats is so good for your health. Now, I know it can be hard to work them into your diet, but when we don't eat things like liver, kidney, and heart regularly, we're missing out on wonderful sources of essential nutrients. Organ meats are nature's multivitamins and the richest sources of natural vitamin A, B vitamins, and minerals that we have. But liver isn't everyone's first choice for a delicious meal, which is why my friends at Paleo Valley created their grass-fed organ complex supplement. Paleo Valley grass-fed organ complex contains three different organs from healthy grass-fed pasture-raised cows. So you're getting a wide array of nutrients, and each ingredient is sourced from a family-run farm in the U.S. It's then gently freeze-dried in order to preserve as many of the nutrients as possible. The end result is an odorless, tasteless, burpless supplement that offers all the benefits of organ meats in an easy-to-swallow capsule form. If you're struggling with brain fog, low energy levels, or if you just want to optimize your health and vitality, try Paleo Valley grass-fed organ complex. And right now, Paleo Valley is offering my listeners 15% off their entire first order. Just go to paleovalley.com/hymen to check out all their clean paleo products and take advantage of this deal. And now, let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
Hi, this is Lauren Feehan, one of the producers of The Doctor's Pharmacy podcast. The aging process can be slowed and the healing process accelerated when we focus on cellular health. Today, exciting new and innovative therapies such as hyperbaric oxygen treatment, stem cell therapy, and red light therapy can help improve cognition, reduce pain and inflammation, and increase energy. In today's episode, we feature four conversations from The Doctor's Pharmacy about supplemental therapies that address dis-ease at the cellular level. Dr. Hyman speaks with Dr. Scott Shear about using hyperbaric oxygen to heal chronic health issues. He then talks about new advances to optimize health and increase longevity. Next, Dr. Hyman speaks with Dr. Bob Harari about using stem cells and exosomes for cellular repair. And finally, he talks with Ben Greenfield about the benefits of red light therapy and sauna. Let's jump in.
So hyperbaric therapy, the definition is relatively simple. It's the increase in atmospheric pressure combined with increased inspired oxygen. So I'll take oxygen first because most people know a little bit about oxygen. So oxygen is something we breathe in the air. It's 21% at sea level. That's how much oxygen's in the air. The rest of it's mostly nitrogen. At 5,000 feet above sea level, where I live here outside of Boulder, Colorado, we're about 16% oxygen. So what happens is oxygen comes into the body. That's okay. We have
ways of trouble climbing the mountains out there.
Yeah, I know. That's why, right? So you get this, and this is actually comes to why it's so important. So we carry oxygen typically on red blood cells. Red blood cells carry this molecule on it called hemoglobin, and hemoglobin binds to oxygen, and then oxygen gets to our tissues, and then it goes all the way through our cells. And then at the end of that whole process, it helps you make ATP, or your cellular energy currency. So oxygen is really important. Without it, we don't live for very long. Now, we have a certain amount of oxygen carrying capacity, and that oxygen carrying capacity is relegated to how many red blood cells we have in circulation, typically. So you have a certain amount of oxygen that can be carried. You have a certain amount of oxygen that can get into your tissues. Now, there's a couple ways to increase the amount of oxygen carrying capacity that you have. You can increase the amount of red blood cells you have in circulation. You can do that by altitude training. So when you go to altitude, for example, come to Colorado, what happens is that your body stimulates a hormone out of your kidneys called epigen, or EPO for short. And EPO, what that does is it increases the number of red blood cells you have in circulation. Now, you can short circuit this by taking the drug itself. This is like cyclists like Lance Armstrong and others would do it.
Yeah, the doping part.
Exactly. Or what you can do is actually you can auto transfuse yourself. So some of these guys will do this. They'll actually take blood out maybe 90 days, because it takes about 90 days to make new red blood cells, 90 days or even even more time than that, like 180 days before a race, and then transfuse yourself a unit of blood before you do a race, and you're going to have extra red blood cells in circulation so that you have increased oxygen carrying capacity. So that's typically what's done in the doping world, right? You have EPO, you have auto transfusion. So you're just transfusing yourself your own blood, but there's another way to increase oxygen carrying capacity, and that's by increasing pressure. So we talked about hyperbaric therapy was increasing atmospheric oxygen. We can increase that up to 100%. But if you're looking at a pulse oximeter, most pulse oximeters for most people are going to read between 96 and 100%, right? Which means that your bound amount of oxygen on your red blood cells is about 96 to 100% once they leave the lungs. So there's not like a lot amount left for you actually to bind any more oxygen there. So if you put a face mask of oxygen on your face and you breathe 100% oxygen, there's not going to be a whole lot more oxygen you can carry because there's only about 4% more of those sites, maybe, that could be bound. So
the trucks are already loaded, right?
Yes, oxygen. Exactly. So the pulse ox is something you guys can check. Everybody knows about a pulse ox now from COVID, et cetera. So if you add pressure, though, if you increase atmospheric pressure, which means that you simulate the pressure you feel under a certain amount of seawater, that pressure changes your physiology and allows oxygen to drive into the plasma or the liquid of your bloodstream. The physics law that's around is something called Henry's law for people who like physics. The only physics law I'm going to talk about today is Henry's law. So the more pressure you put on a gas, the more of that gas is going to go into liquid form. And as a result of that, you get more oxygen into circulation and drive it into the plasma of the liquid of the bloodstream itself, getting up to 1200% more oxygen in as a result of that liquid O2 combined with that pressure with oxygen together. So that's how hyperbaric therapy works.
Mm, incredible. So what are the benefits? Because it sounds like a great idea. Okay, more oxygen. Oxygen's good, or maybe not always, right? You mentioned oxygen toxicity. So too much is not always good, but what are the benefits that we're seeing, both from the perspective of diseases that we can treat with hyperbaric medicine, as well as health optimization, longevity research? And I think there's been a number of studies out there, and I think we're still learning, but I'd love you to sort of unpack, you know, how is this used in traditional medicine and how is it used outside of traditional medicine?
Sure. I first learned about it in a trauma center. In medical school. And they were using it for really bad wounds. They were using it for carbon monoxide poisoning. They were using it for acute infections like necrotizing fasciitis, which is also known as flesh-eating bacteria.
That's a nasty one,
yeah. So the way I like to think about how hyperbaric therapy works is that you have all this oxygen in circulation. And then something happens acutely, or many things happen acutely, or all of a sudden, as soon as you have all that oxygen in circulation, then you have what I call more the long-term benefits of a hyperbaric protocol. And that's related more to what's called epigenetics, which I'm sure you've spoken about many times in the podcast. The idea that you can change your expression of genes to help you with healing, with optimization, with the various ways of rebuilding the scaffolding, as I like to say, of the tissue itself. So when you get into a hyperbaric chamber, you acutely infuse 1200% more oxygen. What's that going to do? That's going to reverse low oxygen states. So if you have tissue that's at risk of dying, if you can get more oxygen to that tissue faster, it may not die. And this has been studied in strokes. It's been studied in traumatic brain injury. It's been studied in acute heart attacks, acute spinal cord injuries. If these people get hyperbaric therapy very quickly, they're going to save tissue because you're getting more oxygen infused into the body. So you have more liquid O2 in, it's going to diffuse out more into the tissue. You're going to prevent it from potentially dying as a result of getting all that oxygen in.
Yeah. Just a quick anecdote on that, and then they keep continuing on the disease thing. My partner fell off a golf cart and had a concussion, smashed her head, and had real bad post-concussive syndrome. So I contacted a local hospital that had a hyperbaric, and I convinced them to off-label, give her hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And it was a game changer. She really came out of there and her brain woke up. It was really quite stunning to see, you know, in person as opposed to, you know, in a scientific article that I read.
Yeah, no, it's always nice. I appreciate the anecdote. I mean, it happened to me. I gave myself an acute concussion maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I did my whole protocol, got into the hyperbaric chamber, and I felt like $1 million after 3 days. And what's going on when you have an acute injury like that is you have acute inflammation. You could have some swelling, you have some tissue that's at risk of dying, depending on the severity of the injury, and you have hyperbaric therapy that's coming in here now, reversing low oxygen states, decreasing inflammation, immediately decreasing swelling, starting the release of stem cells, which are the baby cells in our body that can make new tissue and help mature the tissue in the various areas so that you can make new cells in the area. So you always have these sort of backup cells in all the tissues that you have in your body that are kind of waiting in case they're needed. And hyperbaric therapy can help stimulate the maturation of those so you can start getting them to start healing that area at the same time. And so you have all these things happening along with you have all the immune system cells starting to start getting involved very quickly too. So your immune system starts revving up as well. And you have the immune system cells like your neutrophils and your macrophages, which are really important when you're starting to clean up tissue to help be able to do this. So from an acuity perspective, you have an acute issue. What hyperbaric therapy really does is just rev up the whole healing process to make it work better.
Yeah, it was actually, I also had another patient who had a stroke and he was, you know, it was a hemiplegic stroke, meaning like paralyzed on half and, you know, couldn't move that side of his body. And we did a lot of things, you know, a lot of nutritional things. We gave him, you know, IV NAD and other things, but I was pushing him to do really aggressive hyperbaric treatment and he did, and he's fully recovered. It was really quite shocking because you just don't see people recover from stroke like that, you know?
You don't. No, you don't. I mean, that's what I always say. Obviously, if you have an acute issue, like go to the hospital. Don't try to find your local hyperbaric facility if you're having a heart attack or a stroke
or a traumatic brain injury. First, and you know, your ABCs, we call them.
Yeah, exactly. But as soon as possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
But truly, as soon as possible, if it's possible for you to get into a hyperbaric chamber. Now, the data is still, you know, controversial. Let's call it that. These are off-label indications, right? We have certain on-label indications for hyperbaric therapy, which are covered by insurance that will be covered by Medicare and all your private insurances. But the things that we're talking about,
which are
so
very
far,
limited, by the way,
very limited.
Which are very limited indications, like wound care.
Yep.
You know,
diabetic foot ulcers, radiation injury from cancer treatment. This is delayed radiation injury. So if you have an injury from radiation 6 months or later after your radiation exposure, you can get hyperbaric therapy covered by your insurance companies. There is sudden hearing loss, sudden sensory neural hearing loss. This is when you lose hearing. It's going to be pretty devastating for people. Hyperbaric therapy is covered for that. Chronic bone infections, something called osteomyelitis. If wound care hasn't been helpful, then hyperbaric therapy may be something that you can use. And then at-risk flaps and grafts, this is in plastic surgery. So if you get plastic surgery, then you could potentially get hyperbaric therapy covered for that reason as well.
Yeah, but it's very limited.
Very limited.
And compared to actually what it does, it's like, you know, it's such a powerful medicine and it's
right.
It's like, it's only approved for, you know, nosebleeds, but nothing else. You know,
I know. And so when it comes to it, it's all the baseline physiology stuff that we're talking about here, like decreasing inflammation, reversing low oxygen states, stem cell release. It's an anti-infective. If you have an infection that does not like high oxygen environments, like your Lyme infections, like your clostridial infections, like your staph infections, like these do not like high oxygen environments. They don't do well. The infections don't do well in these environments too. So you have that as another piece. So I always go back to the physiology of it and how we're thinking about hyperbaric therapy in that more global context, as opposed to just, you know, for a specific indication, usually.
So you mentioned, you know, the approved indications, which for most insurance companies and Medicare, Medicaid will reimburse. What about all the non-approved indications that there's evidence science for? Kind of give us the landscape of what are the kinds of things people are treating.
Sure.
And I have many, you know, obviously anecdotes myself, but you've been in this medicine a long time. And I think it's really quite striking how powerful this medicine is when it's applied for a certain condition. So can you kind of take us through the off-label indications and where it's most effective?
Yeah, sure. So when hyperbaric therapy is typically used is in more chronic indications. And these are things that have been going on for long periods of time. And when we're not looking at just that acute infusion of hyperbaric therapy of oxygen to really help, but also the long-term benefit of what I would call an oxygen infusion protocol, where we're shifting on the epigenetic side, expression of various genes, at least 8,000 different genes that are responsible for growth, for healing, for decreasing inflammation, and preventing cell death. And so there's been a lot of research that's been done in multiple different conditions out there, looking at it from this perspective. And we mentioned a couple of them as we've been discussing in the podcast so far, but one of the major ones is stroke, for example. So people with strokes do very, very well if they can get into hyperbaric therapy immediately or very close to it. But also there's a study that was done 3 months to 3 years post-stroke, people getting significantly better, even 3 years after a stroke, which is just unheard of. You just don't see that happening. We also have traumatic brain injury. So we talked about concussion here with your partner, Mark, but also with people that have post-concussive syndrome, this is people 3 months or longer after a concussive episode. Like, we see people with reversal of symptoms a year later, which is not possible. Like, if you've had a concussion, it's 3 months after your concussion, the chances that you're going to get completely better, if you're not better at that point, are very, very low. And we know that this is the case. We see it in hyperbaric facilities all over the country, all over the world, in the places that I work with and the clients that I work with as well. So you have stroke, you have concussion, you have the dementias. So we're talking about vascular, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's associated dementia. There is some evidence that hyperbaric therapy can be effective in these patients as well. Now, especially when used in a functional context, of course. That's a big thing with a lot of these indications. It's not just about getting into a hyperbaric chamber. It's about what are you doing before, during, and after your hyperbaric environment. Like, much before, right before, what are you doing during hyperbaric therapy? What are you doing right afterwards? You know, I know that's a big thing for you too, Mark. I mean, it's not just one single therapy, but especially with all these indications, it's much more of a broad swath of integration that we're looking
at. Yeah, I mean, you can't be eating an inflammatory diet and then, you know, not taking care of yourself and then just expect it to fix you, but it's really powerful. So stroke is really clear. Traumatic brain injury is really clear. And these are big problems. You know, obviously these are also being used, you know, for athletes. A lot of this is for recovery, and we'll get into the performance thing in a minute, but what other health disease sort of indications do you see this being most effective for?
So we're using it a lot in Lyme disease and co-infections. I think it's something that can be very, very effective, but it's something that has to be done in the context of working with a Lyme expert as well, like a Lyme literate doc or a functional doc that has expertise in Lyme. Because what I found with Lyme disease especially is that for most people, I need to get them they need to be about 60 to 80% better already before them to significantly benefit from hyperbaric therapy and have long-term benefit after hyperbaric therapy is completed. That's been my experience there. But that's why the ground game, the foundational stuff is so important, and working with a provider that has expertise. So Lyme is one of them. Another one would be complex regional pain syndrome, so also known as reflex sympathetic dystrophy. It's a very difficult to control, difficult pain syndrome that's unfortunately not uncommon and very difficult to treat. Hyperbaric therapy can be fantastically effective at recalibrating the whole tissue bed that was injured. Typically, it's an injury that causes this to happen, and then there's a dysregulation, or the area, the tissue itself becomes dysregulated. The nerves get all confused, and the blood vessels and everything else, they constrict when they don't constrict. And what we think hyperbaric therapy can do is actually help with what's called blood autoregulation, basically helping regulate how the flow of blood is getting into tissue, because we talked about that pressure. It's that squeeze that's happening on the microcirculation, on the very small blood vessels, that the pressure itself from a hyperbaric chamber is helping exercise those blood vessels and helping recalibrate them. It happens in the brain. It happens in the heart. It happens in the genitals. We know that there's anti-aging studies for all those places, including your natural Viagra, maybe hyperbaric therapy, and if it's a vascular issue, at least. So we know that hyperbaric therapy has this anti-inflammatory capacity. It actually downregulates or decreases some of these major inflammatory markers that you see in autoimmune disease as well, like some of the interleukins, for example, or TNF-alpha, which are some of these, you know, these cytokines is what they're called. So, you know, hyperbaric therapy downregulates or decreases those. So that's another type of condition or group, is the autoimmune conditions as well. We know hyperbaric therapy can be very helpful in those. On its own, maybe not as much as being in more of a holistic perspective.
Yeah. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark here. I am a big fan of bone broth because it's a game changer when it comes to gut healing and skin health. With so many bone broths on the market now, it can kind of be tough to choose, but let me simplify it for you. Fond Bone Broth checks all the boxes when it comes to choosing the healthiest bone broth. They only use fresh, organic herbs, spices, and vegetables, grass-fed and finished beef bones, and pasteurized chicken bones exclusively from regenerative farms. They never use powders or concentrates like many bone broths out there. And their bone broth is slow simmered in stainless steel kettles for 18 hours and is free of gluten, sugar, carbs, and fats, but rich in collagen, protein, and essential trace minerals. On top of that, they package their bone broth in reusable glass jars, and their entire process is 100% free of plastic and aluminum. You'll be hard-pressed to find a more nutrient-dense and sustainable bone broth. Fond Bone Broth is the only verified regenerative bone broth on the market. With every jar of bone broth purchased, you are supporting U.S. regenerative farmers who are focused on reversing the damage that decades of industrial farming has done to our soil. You're not only choosing the healthiest bone broth for you, but the healthiest bone broth for the planet as well. And trust me when I say, Fond Bone Broths are also out of this world delicious. As they say at Fond, handcrafted for health and sipped for pleasure. Head over to fondbonebroth.com and use the code Dr. Mark to receive 20% off your order. That's FondBonebroth.com and use the code Dr. Mark. And be sure to download their new guide on reclaiming your health with bone broth in 2024. And now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy. Yeah, well, I think, you know, people are going to want to buy one now that it fixes erectile dysfunction.
that's how the Israelis got everybody to sign up. Actually, it's kind of funny you mentioned it. They show all the guys pictures of, it's actually one of my favorite things to show as a lecture slide when I lecture, is a functional MRI of the penis before and after hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Wow, that's fun. Okay, I love that.
Nobody knows what it is. It just looks like a tube, and there's colors on it, and then there's more colors on the other one. But I just like to tell everybody it's a penis that I'm putting up on my lecture slides, talking about how hyperbaric therapy regenerates blood vessels. That's one thing that we haven't talked about, is that, you know, what hyperbaric therapy does immediately is reverse low oxygen states by getting more oxygen into tissue. But over the long term, it's actually rebuilding and regenerating blood vessels, something called angiogenesis. So if you have more blood vessels, you're going to get more oxygen to the tissue over the long term, and that's important. And we can see functional MRIs of the brain, of the heart, of the genitals here, and you can see how you can rebuild this tissue. And that's where it comes into sort of the anti-aging, reverse aging world. But yeah, the Israelis would have been the main people that have done a lot of this research on the reverse aging side. So they did studies on the brain, the heart, the genitals, and showing that you could see new vascularization, new blood vessels growing in the brain, in the heart. And so in the heart, it gives you more exercise tolerance, and in the groin, it gives you more sexual tolerance, I guess, or sexual, you know, possibilities. And then they've also done studies looking at senescent cells and telomere length, which are, you know, fancy words for things that get bad as we get old, basically.
Yeah. And zombie cells, we call them. They're cells that don't die, that spew out inflammation, and your telomeres are the little things at the end of your chromosomes that tend to shorten as we age. And so actually in those studies, it seemed to lengthen telomeres more than any other treatment, and actually kill zombie cells more than any other treatment, which is important, as those are just part of the hallmarks of aging we talk about.
Right. Yeah, the zombie cells are a big one too. I mean, I think of all the research that came out, the senescent cells, or the zombie cell, decreased population by about 30%. After 30 treatments was pretty impressive. There's no other treatment out there that we're aware of that can do something like that. But you mentioned chambers at the house, Mark, and I probably should mention a little bit about the different types of chambers out there, because I think people get confused. Yeah,
we're going to get into chambers. We're going to get into how to use them, how long to be in them, what atmospheres. We're going to get into all
getting
that.
Getting ahead of myself.
I want to just linger a little bit more on the treatment side.
Please.
On the things that actually it can help. And, you know, a colleague of mine, a functional medicine doctor, I'm sure you know, David Perlmutter, who was a neurologist, was into hyperbaric medicine, you know, 30 years ago, and had a whole series of hyperbaric chambers at his clinic. And he found it, you know, worked for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Can you talk about its role in neurodegenerative disease? Is there any evidence? What do we know? Does it work? Is it helpful? Should I be thinking about this for that?
Yeah, David is one of the pioneers of using hyperbaric therapy for neurologic injury. There's a couple other clinics that were in Florida doing very similar things. This guy, Dr. Neubauer, one of the older guys that kind of took hyperbaric therapy from the wound care world and started using it for the brain. And it's always like the happenstance kind of thing, right? You have somebody go into a hyperbaric chamber for the bends, but their stroke symptoms get better, or their diabetic neuropathy improves, or their traumatic brain injury that they've had for a year suddenly improves, or their nightmares from PTSD from Vietnam suddenly disappear and don't come back. These are the things that happened in the early 1990s. And so the pioneers of this world were a guy named Dr. Neubauer and Dr. Paul Harch. Paul's still practicing in Louisiana and has been doing this for a while. And they were along with Dr. Perlmutter, they were all looking at how specifically the brain worked under hyperbaric pressure and how hyperbaric therapy could potentially be a modality to help in the ways that we've discussed, you know, decreasing inflammation, improving blood vascularization. And we know that this can happen. We know that brains can start lighting up again, even if they've been degenerating because of cognitive impairment. I mean, you and I both know, Mark, that after about the age of 50 or so, if you put somebody under MRI scanner and you look at their brain, even with just a regular MRI, it's going to have something called microvascular ischemic changes of the brain, which just basically means that blood vessels themselves, the vasculature, is just starting to deteriorate. And so we know that if we can get somebody into a hyperbaric chamber and start rebuilding those blood vessels, they're going to have more tissue that's not going to die, right? Because as the brain gets older, it shrinks because the blood vasculature starts to shrink around it and degenerate. So we think that hyperbaric therapy works in these contexts for cognitive impairment, for Alzheimer's, potentially, especially in the early stages, by decreasing inflammation, by increasing the vascularization of the brain, by actually helping more stem cells populate that area, and then also helping with flow. The one thing that we forget in hyperbaric therapy, actually most of my colleagues forget, is that pressure is actually the main thing that's happening. Of course, oxygen's important, but it's pressure that's driving everything. And pressure itself is driving flow, and it's driving vascular and lymphatic flow. So it's the pressure itself that's helping with the brain's actually detoxification systems and helping you actually get some of that cerebral spinal fluid to flow out and help rebuild and regenerate after getting all that garbage out too. So I think it's a garbage collecting capacity as well that's happening in the chamber.
So if you just scuba dived at 60 feet or that, like for an hour a day, would that do the same thing?
It's a lot of work to go scuba dive every day because, I mean, that goes into protocols. We're not usually just talking about just going once, but there's actually a funny story about that, Mark, because they published a study on these veterans that had traumatic brain injury and PTSD, and they took them diving for 5 days, something like 60 feet a day. And they all said that their TBI symptoms were dramatically better. Their concussion symptoms, their PTSD, all were better. And they attributed it to going diving and looking at the fish. How about the pressure, guys? How about the oxygen? But they said, no, it wasn't that. It was just because they got to look at fish. So,
okay. A couple of things on the other end of the age spectrum. I've seen people use it for autism. What are your thoughts on that?
Or cerebral palsy. So my father, who's a chiropractor, his name's Alan. He runs a facility in New York called the Northport Wellness Center. And he's actually the guy that got me into hyperbaric therapy in the early 2000s because he was looking at how you could use hyperbaric therapy in the context of autistic spectrum within the functional context that you're very much in the sense that could you optimize blood flow to the brain and help with blood flow, what I would call regulation, in the sense of oftentimes in autistic patients, the way that blood flow is regulated, the way it kind of goes to various areas of the brain is abnormal. And if hyperbaric therapy could help regulate that, would it help with actually helping the brain work better? And the answer is that it seems like it does. And there's been some small studies in Canada, in India, in other countries, and even in the US, looking at how it does seem to help autistic kids, but it's not a treatment in and of itself without doing all the other work is required.
360 approach, yeah. But it's an adjunct treatment. Amazing. Yeah. And so, okay. In terms of, you know, the mechanisms of action, to recap, you know, it increases blood flow. It stimulates angiogenesis, which is new blood cell formation. It increases stem cell production. It increases telomere length. It kills zombie cells. It helps with wound healing. It helps reduce inflammation. It's an anti-infective, kills bugs. Did I miss anything?
No, you did well. That was a good lift of everything.
Maybe I don't have too many microvascular changes yet. I'm going to be 64 this year. Maybe my brain is still working.
Well, you've done some hyperbaric therapy. You do a couple other things.
I'm like desperate to get one, honestly. I just wait until I've been stationary enough long enough to get one.
Once you get stationary, I can help you. Yeah. I mean, I think you did a good job with the overview or just the rundown there, Mark. I think the key for people to know, and it's something that I'm very emphatic about, is that I don't think that hyperbaric therapy is right for everybody right now, but I do think that at some point in your life, hyperbaric therapy will very likely be helpful for you. So it's not an if thing, but it's a when thing. But the when thing is important because what happens a lot in my field is that if you own a hyperbaric facility, everything looks like you need to go in a hyperbaric chamber right now.
Yeah. All I have is a hammer. Everything looks like a nail, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I got disinvited from a lecture because I said, please, my lecture title was, please do not put them in the chamber. and it's a provocative, right? But the idea here is that it's not if, but when, ladies and gentlemen, right?
Don't take this pill.
Yes, exactly. So what I often find, if you have a chronic issue, Mark, I need them to see you first. I need them to get optimized first. I need them to start working on their vitamins, nutrition, their minerals, their nutrients, their gut health. But if you have an acute issue, then, you know, do not pass go. Do not collect your $200, you know, find a local hyperbaric facility and start getting treated if it's safe to do so, because it's going to help the whole process. But if you have Lyme disease, if you have a chronic concussion, even if you have a chronic stroke or dementia or, you know, chronic pain, like these things screw up your cellular metabolism and they need to be addressed. If I put somebody in a hyperbaric chamber, I flood their body with oxygen. That's awesome, except if their body cannot tolerate all that oxygen. And what does that mean? Because if you have a lot of oxygen in circulation, you're also causing something called oxidative stress. This is the buildup of free radicals and reactive oxygen species. That's okay. Like, that's what exercise does. That's what heat does at high levels.
Temporarily.
Right. Temporarily, right. But if you're going into a hyperbaric chamber every day, you're not going to be able to potentially neutralize that oxidative stress, and that could be a problem. So it's not like it's a cure-all for everybody right now.
One of the things that happens as we age is our stem cells get pooped out. It's called stem cell exhaustion. It's one of the hallmarks of aging we talked about. And our stem cells age as we age. So their ability to regenerate tissues, cells, to repair, heal our bodies, just kind of declines a little bit. So emerging science tells us that we now can start to use stem cells as a therapy for degenerative conditions, whether it's arthritis or broken down joints. And this is being used in sports medicine for athletes. It's being used in longevity medicine. So it's starting to happen. I think the question is, you know, how do we get more of this? And I think the more research we do on this, the more it becomes acceptable, the more we'll be able to sort of innovate around this. Right now, these stem cells are a little challenging to get because you can't grow your own stem cells and give them to yourselves in America. You have to kind of go to a different country right now. It's because of the regulatory environment, but I think that'll change. But I want you to think of your stem cells as sort of the memory of your youth. They have the capacity to renew, to repair, regenerate cells, and they also secrete factors that regulate the immune system, that reduce inflammation, they stimulate healing throughout the body. And they produce these things called exosomes. We're going to talk about those in a little bit. But these are like little packets of healing factors that contain proteins and peptides and microRNA, all these things that teach your body what to do to repair and heal. Now, studies have shown that stem cell therapy and exosome therapy can reduce inflammation that's associated with aging and also increase energy, physical performance. And it's just moving so fast. So let's just talk about the kind of stem cells, what it can help with, and what might be on the horizon. So really two major types. The first is from your bone marrow. We talked about that a little bit. They're called hematopoietic stem cells. They make red blood cells, white cells. And then there's the mesenchymal stem cells, which come from our tissues, or mesenchyme, which is basically what we're made of. And these come from our organs and so forth, fat. And these can be harvested from bone marrow, if they're the hematopoietic stem cells, or from mesenchymal stem cells, can come from fat or other places. And then they can be injected intravenously into your whole body for systemic healing, or into particular body parts for repairing local issues that are broken down. And they won't be rejected by your immune system because they're immunoprotected, because they're your own cells. Now we're learning also you may be able to get umbilical cord stem cells and placental stem cells. And there's all this kind of stuff that's sort of happening on the horizon, but it's not quite ready for prime time. Now, why might you use them? Well, If you're a longevity biohacker, you might just want to get them injected in your bloodstream. You might want to use them if you have a chronic illness to help with renewing the brain, the heart, the immune system, your mitochondria. They might help you improve the frailty of aging, the loss of muscle mass, improvement in endurance, energy, organ function, all may be influenced by giving stem cells. We still need a lot of research. It's not quite prime time yet, but it's going to become a routine intervention in medicine and the treatment of abnormal aging. Okay, next topic, exosomes. Exosomes we briefly touched on, but these are how stem cells do their work. They have these little packets of repair, regenerative healing factors, and they actually can be given in a much easier way. You don't have to suck out your bone marrow. You don't have to, get a liposuction to kind of draw them out, and you don't have to grow them in a lab. And you can actually get them from either amniotic fluid or from placental fluids, placental material stem cells that are then grown in a lab, and then they can be grown in a way that's very sterile and clean and safe, and they can be extracted, and there's no DNA in them, so they're not identified as foreign. Your body can handle them, and they actually don't get rejected. So they're really kind of cool. They're little, as I said, little packets of growth factors, inflammatory, anti-inflammatory compounds, lipids, proteins, little micro DNA, RNA. And they basically are powerful therapeutic agents for regenerative medicine. I've used them personally to heal back problems after COVID when I had brain fog. And they've been quite remarkable. I had inflammatory bowel disease after an infection with Clostridia difficile, where I got colitis, and I used it to cure that. So I think there's a lot of research emerging around this. We still need more research, but these exosomes are quite amazing. They act like as little messengers and communication systems between cells. They reduce inflammation. They cross your blood-brain barrier. That's why my brain fog went away when I basically took them after COVID. They also improve muscle and brain function. They regulate cellular cleanup, repair. They help with autophagy. They play a role in regulating potentially autoimmune diseases, obesity, lots of things, infections. And they can also help regenerate bone, cartilage, soft tissues, heart, brain. So I've had them injected into my back where I had terrible arthritis and pain, and it just gone. So it's pretty amazing stuff. It's a little expensive. It's not available for prime time for most people yet, but it's really impressive. I've used them, as I said, to cure my own autoimmune issues for my back. I mentioned the COVID with brain fog, fatigue, depression, and basically with just one treatment, it all went away. So now I've used this with many patients, not just myself, and I found for tough cases, it can be extremely effective, and it's very safe, and it's a lot cheaper than stem cells. So how are they made? Where do they come from? Well, we talked a little bit about that, but they're from the stem cells that are grown in a lab that come from placenta and or maybe from amniotic fluid. And then they're cultured in a lab. And then the exosomes are basically extracted, they're concentrated, and they're made available for treatment. So while you might only be growing, a few hundred million stem cells, if you extract them from your bone marrow or your fat, you might get billions and billions of exosomes that can be given in way shortcutting that whole process. A lot of clinics offer this for chronic diseases. A lot of clinics offer it for longevity. They can be given intravenously. We found them very helpful in our clinical practice at the Ultra Wellness Center. And they're really pretty simple to give, just a simple IV push.
In the quest to get access to these remarkable stem cells, scientists, clinicians, and the general public have looked for alternatives to actual whole cell therapy. And so they have said, well, how do stem cells effectuate the benefits we see clinically? And you mentioned it before, the little microscopic nanovesicle nanoparticles that are broken off of stem cells that carry inside the payload, they carry information in the form of genetic material like RNA. They also carry growth factors and other small molecules and other biologic materials that can be transferred to your cells, and in some cases signal processes that are beneficial. So exosomes are a kind of a poor man's way of getting the benefits of cell therapy, but in a micro-dosable way that will have effects, but those effects will be somewhat transient. So it's a way to deliver the power of stem cells in a dosable manner.
Are you saying that exosomes give you a short-term benefit, whereas the stem cells give you a longer-term benefit?
That's right. So if the exosome, if the objective in using an exosome is to treat your back pain, okay, the exosomes that are delivered that have anti-inflammatory payloads will actually lower inflammation and give you benefits, clinical benefits, that will have an effect for a period of time. And it, depending upon what the origin of your back pain is it a chronic injury or was it an acute injury that you simply want to get under control? The duration of effect of exosomes will vary. And so let's say you overdid it, you strained your back, you have inflammation in the paraspinal muscles and maybe in the disc spaces of your vertebral column. Exosomes will deliver the materials to control inflammation and stimulate repair, but it'll stimulate repair by calling upon your own stem cells. Okay. Exosomes also are exciting because they are a relatively scalable and ultimately economical tool that can give you the benefits of cellular therapy without having to deliver the living cells. So that's why there's a lot of popularity and a lot of work going on. And by the way, you know, arguably every cell is making exosomes all day long. So if you have a cultivation system and you're producing cells, those cells will dump exosomes into the soup and it can be collected and delivered as a therapeutic.
Not just stem cells, but all cells.
All cells. Stem cells are particularly good at producing exosomes for obvious reasons, right? They're highly synthetic and so on. But you touched upon something which is near and dear to my heart, which is what's going on in the natural killer cell world. So, you know, we hear it all day long. All the different approaches to longevity have evolved into what are the mechanisms or the processes of dysfunctional aging you want to correct? And one of the processes that's been well recognized is that as we age, some of our cells become senescent. They wind up becoming defective. They accumulate problems and they are, you know, some people, you refer to them as zombie cells, right? And these zombie cells are kind of walking around your body. They're doing their job, but they're doing it less and less effectively and efficiently. And eventually they start to do things abnormally. And that contributes to the accumulated problems we see as the signs of aging. Okay. Now we know that the body under normal circumstances has a system to clear away those zombie cells, those senescent cells. And so there's an entire field called senolytic therapy, where what you're trying to do, you're trying to hasten the removal of those cells, either by stimulating a normal biologic mechanism or by specifically killing those cells and getting them to be cleared away. Well, nature figured out how to do this better than we do it. And the way nature does it is to use a cell called a natural killer cell. And natural killer cells are part of what we call the innate immune system. They are pre-programmed. They're pre-programmed to identify and destroy threats that occur generally in biology. So when we were first studying the placenta and we were so intrigued by this incredible organ, one of the observations that was made was, you know, it's interesting, but one in every 1,000 women who's pregnant has some form of cancer during pregnancy. It's pretty high frequency. But the incidence of a mother transmitting her cancer to a developing fetus essentially is zero, right? I mean, there have been some isolated case reports, but they're not linking the mom's cancer necessarily to the newborn's cancer. So we were intrigued and we asked ourselves, you know, why is it that the placenta, the fetus is protected? And obviously our attention was directed to the placenta. So about 12, 13 years ago, I set my research team on the mission to find out what is it about the placental immune system that is defensive against the transmission of cancer. And we identified this unique natural killer cell from the placenta. So it's a white blood cell that is specialized to be pre-programmed to identify things that are common threats. So what are some of those common threats? Well, viral infections, right? Fungal infections. So it turns out that we learned that these newborn placental stem cells are pre-programmed to attack and destroy cells that express things called stress antigens. So one of the things our cells do when they're in trouble, when they're sick, is they express on the surface of the cell molecules that signal stress. Those stress antigens actually recruit and allow natural killer cells to target and destroy very specifically those old senescent cells. And the mechanism is common to the way we react to viral infection, cancer, and senescent cells. So we upon that observation and discovery, we decided we were going to take placental natural killer cells and use them as a tool in all of those clinical areas, treating viral infections, treating cancer, treating age-related senescent cells. And here's the beauty of it. The NK cells are very, very well tolerated. They can be administered by systemic infusion, and they are really, really good at hunting down and clearing you of your senescent cell population. And there's a lot of work ongoing. You've probably seen publications now. NK cells may, in fact, be the cornerstone of therapy to treat movement disorders like Parkinson's disease, because it appears that they actually identified the defective cells in the part of the brain that's damaged in Parkinson's disease and clean those out. So I'm very hopeful. Yeah. So I'm really hopeful that natural killer cells from placentas will be a tool we use to enhance the senolytic processes that cull the herd and clean up our biology as we age. And I think we know effective senolytic activity benefits us biologically.
Now, are the actual natural killer cells from your body that then are cultured and grown and then given back to you, or are these coming from the placenta as well?
So if you isolate the cells from the individual, you can deliver them back and they'll have a benefit. But like we were talking about, if they're old cells, they may not be as effective as cells from a newborn. The beauty about the placental natural killer cells is that we can manufacture them to very high quality standards. We can subject them to very rigorous controls, and we can deliver them as a one-size-fits-all product. So we've taken these natural killer cells into clinical trials in cancer, and ultimately we want to take them into degenerative diseases as well as age-related, senescent-related phenomena like, our hair loss, skin changes, potentially even things that occur in the brain. But the beauty of it is that it's nature's tool, right? This is what these cells do naturally. This is what they're pre-programmed to do. So we're just basically using them in their normal function.
So this is exactly what I sort of said at the beginning, is the body has its own innate healing system. It's way smarter than our medications. And a lot of the cancer immunotherapies are actually taking advantage of the body's own military self-defense system to help go and find and kill cancers. And it's working better than any therapies we've had for a number of different things. It's not universally effective across all cancers, but it's very promising. And what you're talking about, whether it's stem cells, whether it's natural killer cells, exosomes, these various kinds of cell therapies, they play a role in basically kind of being this sort of globally effective therapy for all sorts of different problems, because it treats these common underlying problems of degeneration and aging that happen in the body that have universal causes. And so you're attacking these universal causes at the root, whether it's inflammation, whether it's, the breakdown of tissues. So you're seeing these can be a key part of medicine in the future. Right now, it feels like these are inaccessible. They're still part of large research trials. You can't really go and get them easily. There's clinics here and there where you can try to get them, or you can go out of the country to get them. But how far are we away from having this being part of regular medical practice?
So your books explain to everyone exactly what you were alluding to, which is that we should go to the root cause of the problem. And in many cases, nature has already developed a system to address the root cause, right?
Yeah.
I love it, man. Nature's a lot smarter than we are, right?
Yeah, totally.
And the beauty, if you have a teleological approach to things, the beauty is evolution and the natural selection process leads to the use of those tools that are most effective. The ones that are effective, the ones that stick around, and you know, the next generation and the next generation will have them. So the truth is, what we're doing in its cellularity and in the cellular medicine industry is trying to produce a product that can be delivered in the conventional healthcare system reliably, logistically, conveniently, and economically, so that we can enhance all of the systems that nature built to keep us healthy. So at Cellularity, you know, we have spent decades, two decades, on figuring out what the placenta is all about, what we can get out of it, and what the clinical value of those cells could be to treat some of the things we've been discussing today. Serious diseases like cancer, all the way to improving the thickness and the quality of our hair. And I can tell you that this is now kind of the hottest game in town in many areas. You know, there are parts of the world, the Gulf states, the Middle East, parts of Asia, you know, clearly some areas of Eastern Europe, where a progressive, receptive approach to cellular medicine has created an explosion of applications of this technology to treat diseases. Cellularity recognizes that the global opportunity is vast, maybe the biggest, maybe the most lucrative opportunity in all of healthcare. But what's great about it is it's going to drive us to sort of proactive treatment rather than reactive treatment. If we know the reason that we develop joint problems is that as we age, chronic inflammation damages our joints, maybe what you do is you treat it before it becomes symptomatic, and you deliver a cell therapy product that helps to build your cartilage back better, control inflammation in the joint, and you never get to the point that degenerative disease actually affects your life. So cell therapy has the potential of transforming healthcare because it can be very proactive. And companies like ours are working to deliver these products at scale, conveniently, and with the economics that fit the healthcare system. I'd much rather prevent somebody from getting joint disease than have to replace them three times in their lifetime with prosthetics. So that's the promise of cellular medicine. I think obviously cellularity is at the forefront of this because our source material is abundantly available, right? There's almost 200 million placentas thrown away a year in the world. By collecting this biological waste material, isolating the cellular components, and then producing them to scale, for example, one placenta can produce tens of thousands of doses of cells. And so the incredible scalability, the logistic ease of getting that raw material, and the economics of it ultimately, I think, are going to help drive this to being the tool that we use proactively as well as reactively, you know, in response to disease. And so, you know, the promise is enormous.
Light in general is fascinating. I don't know how much you've looked into light. I'm reading this book right now called The Human Photosynthesis, and it actually gets into how the human melanin pigment actually operates very similar to the chlorophyll pigment in plants.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to accept photons of light and generate, I think for each molecule of water, it's about 4 electrons, which can then be used to move through the electron transport chain and technically generate ATP-based energy.
So that's how our body makes energy. So
it's
basically
human photosynthesis. Yeah, the electron transport chain is how we make energy, but normally you'd feed glucose into that cycle, right?
So you can feed light to make energy.
You can use the combination of light and melanin to produce energy. And I had already known a little bit about that idea of some element of human photosynthesis. I think it was Sire G who published an article on Green Med like maybe 5 years ago, and it really caught my eye. He was talking about how upon ingestion of chlorophyll-rich compounds, you saw a similar effect. Chlorophyll-rich compounds combined with sunlight, so like phytoplankton or green-blue algae or chlorella or spirulina or something like that. But it turns out that just melanin alone, you know, even in the absence of a lot of these green-blue compounds combined with sunlight, can shift you into a state of producing electrons.
So it's basically mitochondrial therapy.
It's like charging the body's battery. Yeah. And so
for those people that don't really understand, mitochondria are the little energy factories in your cells, and they take oxygen and they take food and they burn them, and that's how you have energy to run everything. But what you're saying is that light also can contribute to the rejuvenation of your mitochondria, which is central to aging. And we're going to get into that in a minute.
Right. And the discussion of melanin aside, we know that certain spectrums of light can activate an element of the mitochondria called cytochrome C oxidase. And so anything in about the 600 to 850 nanometer spectrum of light, and this would be like red light, infrared light, some parts of far infrared light can fall into that spectrum, but it's normally near infrared and red that are going to target cytochrome C oxidase. It's actually wonderful for the mitochondria. You get a nitric oxide production. You can trigger collagen and elastin production. No really good human clinical studies that I've seen, but a lot of anecdotal evidence. And I think Juve has put out some articles on their site about upregulation of mitochondrial activity in Leydig cells in the testes. So there's an amplified total testosterone response if men are using this.
Wait. So you're saying as you shine this red light on you and your testosterone goes up?
Yes. So that you take off your clothes in front of these red light panels, and so you get the skin effect, and you also get the endocrine effect.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Testosterone effect, yeah. So I mean, nothing's.
So you have to shine it on your.
You got to shine it on your guys, and there are multiple ways to do it. Like I actually travel with one of the little mini ones, and I'll just lay in bed at night, read a book, and you know, kind of tuck it in my crotch and shine it for about 10 minutes.
Wow.
At home, I have one of the big panels, and it's at my desk, so I can stand at that while I'm working on my desk. You don't want too much. It's
it's 10 minutes a day.
Yeah, excess stimulation of some of those nitric oxide synthase pathways and that excess stimulation of cytochrome C oxidase in the mitochondria can generate excess free radicals, right? So this is something you could overdo. And same way you could overdo UVA and UVB from sunlight.
So it's a little too much charge, and that creates secondary damage in the body is what you're saying.
Yeah, excess, in this case, it would be reactive oxygen species.
So like free radicals.
In response to excess metabolic activity. So... Yeah, we know any of these things that might induce a mild hormetic effect from cryotherapy to exercise to heat, they would be unfavorable in large amounts. But
Stop. So what you just said something was a very cool concept, which is hormesis, hormetic. Mm-hmm. People have no idea what that is. Most people have never heard of the word. And what it means is that when there's a stress to the system, it activates a healing response. So a little bit of stress, like if you exercise and lift a weight, it's going to create a little bit of micro damage in the muscles, but that makes them stronger. Right?
Yes, so, assuming you allow them to rest and recover, and the same could be said of radiation. There's one study that showed that the rodents around Chernobyl were living longer than non-irradiated rodents. So there's some evidence even mild amounts of radiation may be beneficial. This might be partially why earthing and grounding and going outside barefoot and getting exposed to that type of radiation is beneficial. You know, lower risk of skin cancer with frequent, sane exposure to sunlight due to that hormetic effect and building up.
And the cryotherapy you mentioned, which is cold shock therapy.
Right. Yeah, with the cold... that can excessively activate the sympathetic nervous system. It can stress the immune system. It can be too much, but in small amounts, right? You get nitric oxide production and you get that activation of the vagus nerve and you get a little bit of conversion of your adipose tissue into metabolically active brown fat. And so small amounts of cold, good. Large amounts, as anyone knows who's maybe not dressed right for a day of skiing, it can be stressful. Heat, same thing. We know from like the Finnish longevity study, the men's longevity study, that
saunas,
four to five times a week in the sauna, and you see a distinct increase.
I do that. I do both. Longevity. I do like a hot steam, really hot, and then I jump in an ice bath.
Well, that's what they left out in that study, I think, is because I've gone to Finland and I've gone to the men's Finnish sauna society. They jump in the ice. They'll go in the sauna and then they'll go jump in the Baltic Sea, stand outside to dry off, shivering, and then go back in the heat and do a few rounds of that.
Then,
of course, there's the social component, right? They're with their buddies, hanging out. When they go in the sauna, you're quiet, you're breathing, you're not on your phone. So there's some components that I think go beyond the sauna.
Yeah, and I remember once I was in Maine, I had a friend of mine had a wood-fired sauna, and we literally sat in there for 6 hours.
Yeah.
And we'd go back out into the snow and roll around in the snow.
Oh, it's amazing.
And then get back in the sauna, roll around in the snow. I'd never felt that good in my entire life.
We do that at our house. My kids call them snow angels, and what we'll do is do the sauna. Then as you're walking out, trudging through the snow out to the hot tub, you stop, you do snow angels, you get in the hot tub, you get that tingling in the skin, all that nitric oxide, then you go back out and do snow angels. And yeah, the idea of hot, cold, you know, again, for the hormetic effect is fabulous.
Thanks for listening today. If you love this podcast, please share it with your friends and family. Leave a comment on your own best practices on how you upgrade your health and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And follow me on all social media channels at Dr. Mark Hyman. And we'll see you next time on The Doctor's Pharmacy. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Hyman. Thanks for tuning into The Doctor's Pharmacy. I hope you're loving this podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do and introducing you all the experts that I know and I love and that I've learned so much from. And I want to tell you about something else I'm doing, which is called Mark's Picks. It's my weekly newsletter. And in it, I share my favorite stuff, from foods to supplements to gadgets to tools to enhance your health. It's all the cool stuff that I use and that my team uses to optimize and enhance our health. And I'd love you to sign up for the weekly newsletter. I'll only send it to you once a week on Fridays. Nothing else, I promise. And all you have to do is go to drhyman.com/picks to sign up. That's drhyman.com/picks, P-I-C-K-S, and sign up for the newsletter, and I'll share with you my favorite stuff that I use to enhance my health and get healthier and better and live younger longer. This podcast is separate from my clinical practice at the Ultra Wellness Center, my work at Cleveland Clinic and Function Health, where I'm the chief medical officer. This podcast represents my opinions and my guest opinions. Neither myself nor the podcast endorses the views or statements of my guests. This podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner now. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who is trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health. Keeping this podcast free is part of my mission to bring practical ways of improving health to the general public. And in keeping with that theme, I'd like to express gratitude to those sponsors that made today's podcast possible.